Holiness comes from wisdom. Wisdom, the Bible in the book of Proverbs calls it, is the principal thing. Later we'll do the book of Proverbs. See, in the book of Proverbs it tells you, wisdom is the principal thing. Seek after it. Says in the beginning, God through wisdom founded the heavens and the earth. Why didn't he say holiness? Do you notice that in the book of Proverbs, in the book of Psalms, it emphasized getting wisdom and the knowledge of God? It never emphasized getting holiness. Yet, it does emphasize you must be holy. You must live your life holy with God. But it always emphasized get that wisdom and knowledge. Why? Because wisdom and the knowledge of God produces holiness. So you go after the source, not the product. Holiness is the product of wisdom. Therefore, all sin is a product of foolishness. Think very carefully. Or lack of knowledge. Didn't the book of Isaiah 53 says that they all lack understanding? There's none that understand in their midst. So if you want more holiness, now you know how to get it. There are a lot of people going after holiness but don't know how to get it. They're going after the products. Go for wisdom. Go for wisdom. When you go for wisdom, the wisdom and the knowledge of God, that will enable you to have more holiness in God. We consider more as we go along in these matters. But we begin to see how the fall of man deteriorated, even though man multiplied. Right up to chapter 5, the evil that was in him continued. Then in chapter 6, right on to chapter 11, chapter 6, right on to chapter 10, we see the part that talks about the flood. Now, the effects of the flood are felt up to today. During the flood, in Genesis 6, you notice there are certain statements that God made. God said, now let's look at the background, chapter 6, verse 1 and 2. It came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, and that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. It says in verse 4, they were giants on the earth in those days, and also afterward when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, that they bore children to them, they were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. There are two possible interpretations for the sons of God. One interpretation that some people take, and some scholars take, there are only two schools of thought. One school of thought is that the word sons of God refer to human beings of the line of Seth. So they always said that Seth line is the holy line and everyone after that is called the sons of God. But there are two problems if you take that view. Number one, you cannot explain why the giants came about suddenly out of Seth line. Was Seth a giant? Did he have giant genes? Why should there suddenly be giants come about if he's an ordinary man? On the line of Seth. Then the daughters of men must be Cain's line. And if this Cain's line, does that mean that, you know, Cain was a dwarf? So you have problem explaining the physical manifestation of that result. Number two, the other problem with that view is that not everyone of Seth's line was a holy son of God. If you trace it very carefully, not everyone followed God. Not everyone followed God. If every one of them had followed God in the first place, you know, they wouldn't have done those things in Genesis 6. You see, the argument contradicts itself. If they were son of God, how can they do that? This is self-contradictory. The other view that people interpret are the sons of God, which is harder to comprehend, but the one that stands out very clear. It also has difficulty. The difficulty we will look into afterwards. In the Old Testament, there are about four times, and you take the occasion in Psalms 2, then there will be five. But basically, four times the word sons of God appear in the Old Testament. Three times is in the book of Job. And you read the book of Job chapter 1 and chapter 2, the word sons of God does not refer to human beings. It refers to angels. It was an Old Testament way of referring to angels. So if we take that view, then the logical interpretation will be that sons of God refers to angels. Now, it also brings problems. It brings problems because the first question people ask is, how can angels marry? Didn't Jesus say that angels neither marry nor are given in marriage? The resurrected people are like angels, neither marry nor given in marriage. Good question. But there are also two problematic verses that helps us in the book of Jude and in 2 Peter chapter 2. The book of Jude tells us in verse 6, and the angels who did not keep their proper domain but left their own habitation, he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. This is Jude writing. And he's talking about a particular group of angels. Here he says, they are locked up now, during his writing. Now we all know that Satan's fallen angels are still running loose. You see some of them in the book of Daniel, the prince of Persia. So that tells you that some of the angels are locked up, fallen angels are locked up, some are loose, logically. All those verses comparing together. So then the question is, who are these particular group of angels that are locked up until the judgment day? They are not allowed to be loose at all. They are not running loose like Satan. Satan himself is a fallen angel, and he's running loose. Why? If they are locked up, why didn't God lock Satan up too? Why so special? Why the punishment is so special for this? You read carefully. They have left their proper domain. You study the Greek word for the word proper domain. It talks about leaving the realm that they were supposed to live and function in into another realm. Then you look carefully in verse 7. Jude verse 7. The first word there is the word as. As. That tells you that verse 6 is not a complete sentence. And the word as links it to Sodom and Gomorrah, which is unthinkable. And if you examine the facts that are being presented, he's linking whatever those angels have done to what Sodom and Gomorrah have done. When you think of Sodom and Gomorrah, what do you think of? Sexual licentiousness. Sexual sin. Jude is linking those angels to Sodom and Gomorrah. One more scripture, 2 Peter chapter 2. And in case some of you are Bible scholars, some of you could be seminary professors here or Bible students. Currently, the second view is now more popular. So, just in case you think that this view is in a minority now. The latest commentaries that have just come out, one produced by the Earthman's, which is a very evangelical publisher, and then another new one has advocated the second view. I mentioned that in case the scholars here, right? So sometimes you bring out things, people think that, you know, these things are strange and new. You're the only one in the world who believes like that, right? Let's look at 2 Peter chapter 2. And here he speaks about a group of angels, same group. And he points in verse 4 and 5, close to the time of Noah again. For if God did not spare the angels who sinned, notice, who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment. Now they are now locked up. In Peter's writing, at the time he was writing, they were locked up.
they cannot be referring to Satan and his fallen angels because they are still around up to today. Running loose, you can be assured Satan is not locked up yet. Neither are some of his fallen angels. So this particular group of fallen angels must have done something special that warrants a judgment of God immediately. And again, it points back to Genesis 6. So the most logical and interpretation of Genesis 6 with all this background is that those sons of God, although it's unthinkable, very hard for us to comprehend, they are angels. Now how do we liaise with those scriptures? Jesus said angels neither marry nor are given in marriage. I would interpret that there are many types of angels, which we do know they are. Worship angels are angels, seraphim, cherubim. This particular group of angels that were locked up seem to have the capability of materializing themselves and reproducing. So because of that, they were specially locked up. In case some of you ladies today are looking around, wondering anyone or dancing around. No, absolutely every one of those angels that have that capability to materialize themselves have been locked up because of that very, very exceptional sin. So there was this terrible thing that was happening. Besides that, human beings were getting more wicked. Not only was God against the works, God was against the future works in verse 5. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, Genesis chapter 6 verse 5. And that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. So God said, a judgment will come. He found Noah. And here is Noah, who found grace in the eyes of God. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 3, God says, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is in the flesh, and his day shall be 120 years. God predetermined the judgment. Set a time for the judgment to come about. Now the word 120 years has two interpretations also. See, we are going through the book. Genesis will cover all the problematic areas. You could interpret, number one, that at that time God shortened man's lifespan. Right to 120. But if you take that view, you would have a problem. Because to be consistent, after that, man's lifespan must be shortened. Yet after that, you find Noah lived to about 600 odd, and his children lived to about 4, some of them about 4, some about 500 odd years. After that, in the days of Pelet, they still live over 200 over years. Even Abraham and Jacob surpassed 120 years. So there's something missing there. The other interpretation, the 120 years, is that 120 years refer to the time period God gives sin to say he's going to pronounce judgment. It's not necessarily the whole period that he immediately spoke to Noah, but he predetermined that judgment coming. So then he found Noah, and then Noah found grace in the eyes of God, and he built. And from the time God predetermined judgment, right after 120 years after he's spoken, it was when a flood came. That's the other interpretation, which looks more solid. Now in chapter 6, the flood, which is the third event in the first part of Genesis, has four sub-events. Okay? There are four events, first part, four events. Four events in Genesis 1 to 11, four major persons in Genesis 12 to 50, and then the first event we finished, second event the fall, third event the flood. Third event the flood has four sub-events. The four sub-events are very important because they affect life today. During the flood, many things happened when the flood came. Number one, under the flood, third event, 3A, A, B, and C. When God spoke about the flood, it had never rained on the earth yet.